So I have a little disclaimer here before this episode of the Freedom Fiends. There is an audio problem with this episode. The guy responsible, the intern, has been fired. This guy, Cash Newman, he was over here learning stuff yesterday, and I was playing synthesizer, and he had the echo running when we went today to record. I forgot to check, so I take full responsibility for that. He was running the board. And I didn't do what I usually do, which is record a little bit and play it back. So because of that, there's echo on my voice. Cal sounds fine, so we're putting it out. And I've heard worse on radio and on podcasts, but Cal sounds great, and he's brilliant. So we're putting this out. Cash Newman's been fired. Don't ever work with that guy, at least for audio. He's not good. There's basically two things you cannot fix in the mix: distortion and echo. And just be glad this isn't distortion. It's echo. Just pretend it's psychedelic. All right, Worms.
We're rolling.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. We are located at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And if you'd like to receive a transcript of today's episode, please send $50,000 to Bipcoin. $50,000 in Bipcoin to Bipcoin@gmail.com. So I am Mr. Michael Dean. We got Mr. Cal Molinay.
How you doing, man?
What's up?
We're doing great, man.
Worms?
Yeah.
Have you ever been a member of the Freedom Fiends?
I've always been a member of the Freedom Fiends. Ever since I saw you guys at Porkfest back in, I think, 2012 or 13.
Really? You were in the room for that?
Yeah.
Was I there?
I saw you guys. I think you guys were sitting on a toilet. I'm not sure.
You were at the toilet? You were at that?
Really? Yeah, I was near it. Yeah.
You were hanging out in the Brad Spangler Memorial Playground or something? that place where we showed...
I did see that. I saw that, yeah.
Did you see when we showed DIY or Die or Guns and Weed? One of the films I showed there.
I think I saw Guns and Weed.
Yeah. Oh, man, I never met you. I didn't know we'd ever been in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, man.
That's cool.
Nice. Yeah. Freedom Means. Since forever ago.
You should have said hi. You probably did. But I was like, you know, I'm the star today. Who are these little people? I don't remember their names. Yeah.
Freedom Fiends forever.
What was the first year that you got trolled or blocked on the internet?
First year, huh? I wouldn't say trolled. I've been blocked a lot. I don't block anyone, but you know, I just don't have the time to kind of, you know, put that stuff up. But yeah, people try to troll me all the time. I think like 2 weeks ago, there was a flux of communists that came on my Facebook wall.
Oh, I hate them.
Nitpicking everything. Somebody posted my name in some group, and then, you know, everybody came in. I mean, those are fun times.
Communists are horrible. Yeah.
they're funny.
Did you fire up the helicopter?
Oh, yeah. Wrapped them up.
When did you get on the internet?
2000 and maybe 10.
Wow. I got on in 1996, but I actually got trolled and blocked on the internet in 1975. I realized this the other day. When I was 10, he's 74, 75. When I was 10, my sister was going to Dartmouth College. You know Dartmouth, right up there in New Hampshire?
Both my sisters went to Ivy League universities,
and I went to community college because I was too smart for that crap. She went to Dartmouth. My other one, she has a bachelor's from Dartmouth. My other sister has a PhD from Cornell. And, you know, politics.
Yeah, they were hippies back then.
They're leftists now. Good people, but bad politics.
Are you the oldest sibling?
No, I'm the youngest sibling. My brother's 75, man. I'm 54. I got two sisters older than me and a brother who's older than your dad, probably.
Older siblings usually pave the way for their younger siblings.
To do what?
So, get blocked on the internet? They model them. Yeah, I mean, not to be a liberal.
Well, they helped me be anti-war, which is my longest-running belief. But now I'm anti-war and pro-gun, and they're still really anti-gun. But I actually did get trolled and blocked on the internet in 74, 75. When I was 9 or 10, I was visiting my sister at in New Hampshire. And she took me to the computer lab. They had a computer lab there. And computer labs then, like computers then weren't like, you know.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, you went to college. Like there was probably a computer lab, right? A bunch of Windows computers and stuff. So this was way before that when a computer took up a whole room. And they were so valuable and expensive that the scientists, that they required scientists to keep them running. And the scientists at Dartmouth invented something called time-sharing. You ever heard of time-sharing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's how computers used to work, where one would, you know, basically you'd write your program and then at night you'd hand them a bunch of punch cards and they'd run it, the scientists would run it through the computer. And then the next day, you'd get back the answer to your problem. Like you wouldn't just open a, you know, for complex problems, but for simple problems, it was all DOS-based and Fortran and assembly language. But Dartmouth's computer lab was connected to the ARPANET, and it was one of the, you know, 45 nodes on the ARPANET at the time. It was all military and then usually Ivy League universities and then some out in California that weren't Ivy League, but, you know, were formed after the Ivy League, but the equivalent, like Stanford. And I was, if you can, this is going to come as a big shock to you, but I was a hyperactive kid, you know? I was like,
can you imagine that?
It's hard to believe.
No way, dude.
But yeah. So I was like running around this computer lab, like trying to get them to teach me to program, you know? Like I could barely do math, but I was trying to. And back then you had to do math. And my memory of this is that I went to go to the bathroom. The bathroom was like right off this room. This room was probably, you know, 40 feet by 50 feet. And then there was a small bathroom off of it. You know, the door of the bathroom opened up to the computer room. And these computers were just terminals connected to, you know, the big brain computer in another room. But I got locked in the bathroom for like 5 or 10 minutes and was freaking out and screaming. And I thought about that the other day, and I'm like, you know, there's no way I got locked in that bathroom. They locked me in that bathroom. So I got blocked and trolled on the internet in 1974 or 5.
I love the argument that people say that without government, you'd have no internet.
Oh, you definitely would. Oh, that's just a lie made up by the... I mean, basically, back then, to do big science, since the government was stealing all the money, they happened to have helped do it first. But no.
Yeah, all the computer parts, the tubes, the big machines, all that stuff was already created by the market.
By the market and by the military, too. I mean, a lot of advances in tubes to transistors and transistors to integrated circuits happened in between World War II and Vietnam War and after. But it would have happened anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Smithsonian that was racing the Wright brothers to create their first flight.
Wait, the Smithsonian says what?
The Smithsonian was competing against the Wright brothers to create the airplane. And so if the Smithsonian had beaten the Wright brothers today, all you would hear is without government, you'd have no airplanes.
Yeah, but now the Smithsonian just has the plane.
No, they have. That's the plan.
They have the plane. Yeah. Or at least.
Yeah, they have the plan.
I don't know if it's actually the plane. You never know with government. They lie a lot. It could be a replica. Did you see that the FBI claims they figured out who D.B. Cooper is?
Who's D.B. Cooper?
D.B. Cooper is the guy who hijacked an airplane, got a bunch of money, and jumped out of an airplane and disappeared.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they ever find that money?
They found some of the money. In the mud. Well, supposedly. Maybe the FBI made that all up. Maybe the FBI created him, and he was an FBI agent. Who knows? I mean, he kind of looked like it. Like the drawing, you know, they had the police artists come in, and they had people on the plane sketch, you know, they had described him and sketched him, and he looked like an FBI agent. He was like a skinny guy with a bad haircut. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was news today.
I heard something about
the FBI claims that they decoded a letter that they've had forever that they've never mentioned to the public, and that it's some Vietnam vet, and he has a name and a face and a picture now. But it's kind of more like it's one of the it's the longest running open FBI case that's unsolved. So I think that's embarrassing. So I think they might have just made it up. Who knows?
And I heard the money's still out there somewhere.
Well, he parachuted out of a plane with $200,000 in 1972, which is like several million in today's money. Buying power.
Right.
But they found, you know, like a few thousand of it bundled in the mud in some river, on the banks of some river. Like some people found it and called the FBI. Some guy out with his kid fishing. But I mean, they believe that he died because he, you know, jumped out of a commercial jet liner at a very high, at a high altitude on a cold night, you know, with no. Not much. They thought he froze to death and died in the woods somewhere and was eaten by wolves or something. But yeah.
Right, or his parachute got caught on a tree or something.
Yeah, but they never found him.
Tragedy.
Yep. they lie. You know, so I've got a theory that I want to talk to you about and ask you questions about. And it's about how things would work without... Not the government, but a government or some tiny bit of government. Were you ever... What's a minarchist, first of all? Let's define that for the people on radio.
You could say socialist, light socialist. They want the socialized control monopoly on courts and law and security. Basic things you can say.
So basically, they believe that government doesn't do things well, so government should only do the most important things.
Right, yeah. But, you know, the same argument that they have against why government shouldn't be involved in this, A, B, and C, you know, the same arguments apply to also X, Y, and Z. But, you know, they're not consistent enough to see that or spend much time thinking about that.
What if they are consistent? Have you ever met a consistent minarchist?
No.
Is it possible?
No.
I think I've met one. Boston Tea Party. Do you know him?
No.
Okay. You should. He's an OG libertarian. He's been writing books about libertarianism and guns for about 20 years. Lives in Wyoming. Started Free State Wyoming. And he's a very, very deep minarchist. Meaning, he makes the Libertarian Party look like Stalin. You know, he's that much smaller government than them. And he's not advocating for government. He's not saying, we need government. He doesn't vote. He hasn't voted in 40 years or something. And he basically tries to stay out of the way of the government. He wrote a bunch of books, and they're all great. One of them was My Ticket to Libertarianism. It was a book called You and the Police. And I read it in one sitting about 12, 13 years ago. And basically the premise, it's the blueprint for Cop Block. Cop Block read this book, and I know they did. I've talked to them about it. They read this book and became Cop Block after reading this book. So he's important and contributed a lot to Liberty, but a lot of people, a lot of these new kids today, you and younger, don't know who he is. But yeah. So his premise, when I asked him, because I'm a voluntarist, which is an anarcho-capitalist type. I think you are too. Would you fall under both of those things?
Yeah, libertarian, free market anarchist, anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, agorist.
So how would things work? How would courts work in the absence of a government?
Pretty much the way they do now in the market, right? eBay, Etsy, they have their own ways to resolve disputes, conflicts. Your bank, if somebody does an unauthorized credit card purchase, you know, they give you the money back and they investigate it themselves, send you a new card. You know, these are conflicts, right? These are property rights violations, and they have a good way of doing it efficiently, fast, because, you know, time is money. They don't kind of prolong it as government courts tend to do.
Actually, eBay is not very good at it. Amazon is good at it. Have you ever dealt with eBay on someone ripping you off? Were they good about it?
Yeah.
Okay. They might have changed. I did this early on, I don't know, over 15 years ago. Whenever eBay started, like a few years after that, and they were not good at it. They must have gotten better.
They have to. The thing, even with eBay and anything else, they're not forced to pay for their salaries, right? That's part of the service that you're using.
What do you mean by that?
Same thing with
explain that for people who don't. Imagine everyone listening has no idea what any of this is about. That's radio.
All a judge does is just provides an opinion on resolving conflicts of dispute. An arbiter, right?
Cut the baby in half.
Yeah. So, they have arbiters on eBay, Etsy, and you have the policy when you sign up, and you don't pay for their salaries. Their salary comes from the sales that they make there. So you already have kind of like it used to cost money to get internet at our Starbucks cafe a couple of years ago. Now it's provided freely at a mall. Right, it's part of the services.
McDonald's has it free.
Yeah, I mean, even McDonald's has it now. Yeah. But it used to be back then you had to pay for that.
When I got on the internet in 1996, you had to pay by the hour at home.
Right. And now they find that arbitration is a service that everybody needs in these particular areas, and they provide it for free, you know, and they get their cut from the sales.
Who's they?
From the vendors.
Like eBay?
So, yeah, eBay, same thing with Etsy, same thing with a lot of places.
Yeah.
So whereas you're forced to pay for a judge's salary, and then you're still forced to pay for court costs and fees on top of that, the judges themselves are not entirely unbiased and partial. You're forced to go there. Whereas with Etsy and these other places, you're free to go. You know, you can choose where you want to sell your wares or where you want to buy your stuff.
Yeah.
And the policies that each company has, it's different from one another in terms of efficiency and how well they do, right? So like right off the bat, the market already has examples of arbitration, of resolving conflicts of dispute. So that's not an impossible feat if the market already does it now.
I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
So what would happen? Let's use a fictitious situation here, a mind experiment. So if your neighbor kills your kid.
No, let's do something less severe than that.
If your neighbor steals something from you. If your neighbor steals something that's worth a lot, like steals your car, and you see him take it, but you don't have video of it, and he does not have it on his property where you can see it. It's not visible. But you saw him take it. So how do you get justice without government in a private court?
And I want to preface, I'm not getting toward like, we need government. I'm getting toward, I can't see how this one tiny thing would work in liberty.
So the thing is, with neighbors, he's my neighbors, right? So this presumes that we live in a gated community, and a gated community will have policies in which you sign up for before you move in, right? Here are the rules of the community, of the gated community, and do you agree with them or not? And these rules will also have outlined consequences for violating property rights.
Like a homeowners association.
Right.
But not evil.
So like if I were to do that to my neighbor, I've already agreed what the conditions would be in the event if I'm accused or in the event I am caught, how much compensation I would have to remediate. And it'll be different from community to community. Like the Amish, for example, there is a shooting that happened a couple of years ago at one of their schools. And, you know, they forgave the killer. You know, that's their way of life. They don't really believe in punishment. They think having sin is punishment enough. And so it'll be different from community to community. And of course, you know, I would run to seek recompense. And I live in one that has those particular rules outlined for my neighbor's protection and mine. And so, you know, so that already outlines the procedures on how to go ahead and examine this particular case. So it's not like, you know, oh my God, I have a neighbor out of nowhere, like magically it just appears. You know, there's steps that went along before he became my neighbor. And part of those steps would be that he agreed to the conditions of being accused of a crime and a third party settling in and investigating that. And of course, if I'm wrong, you know, I'd pay recompense to the neighbor. So it's not exactly.
That sounds great. Now, what if that guy
is not your neighbor, and he's one of the outliers on the edge of town where there's no rules and no laws, like the people no one wants to deal with, and no one wants to, let's just say he's squatting out in the woods. He doesn't live anywhere that has an agreement. So what do you do then if he steals your car?
I mean, first of all, I'm covered with insurance with my car being stolen.
Right.
And so now it's up to the insurance investigators to go out there and figure that out on their own to kind of recover the property.
And insurance would be a bigger thing in LibPair. LibPair is the term that Nima Vedati and I invented for Libertarian Paradise. It's kind of 1984 short speak. It's capital L-I-B, capital P-A-R, all one word, LibPair. So in LibPair, insurance companies would be more common probably and less evil. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, right now there's like limitations on people trying to get into the liability markets from the government.
Yeah.
And you know, and with the government, they're able to prevent competition from getting in there as well.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have to go to State Farm. You could go to like Lusander Fiends Insurance.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Operates out of his truck.
Right.
Or Jeremy.
Right off the bat,
Jeremy's an anarchist. He lives in a van. So he could have cheaper probably if he runs it out of a van than out of his house.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, there'd be some concern from the community that their security failed to stop someone from a stranger from breaking in and climbing over that wall. And, you know, there'd be,
there'd be more walls.
There'd be more walls higher. The wall just got 10 foot higher, right? And you have drones out there that can investigate and, you know, take a look around and, you know, heat seeking, you know, cameras, you know, there's ways to find out whether property has been indeed stolen or not.
So here's what I'm getting at. That's a good explanation of how things would work generally, how courts could work without arbitration or seeking recompense from somebody without a government. And I like all that, and it makes sense to me. And I believe a lot of things could work without the government. I think roads could work. I think they'd be paid for by Walmart. And I even think national defense could work. It'd probably be, you know, national speaking in the sense of an area the size of a country. I think that would probably be Google because they'd want to keep their, you know, and Amazon. They'd want to keep their minions safe so they could buy things from them. So we could buy things from them. But the one thing that I can't
understand. That'd be like a great tagline for them. You know, we keep you safe.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. The one thing that Boston says he can't figure out how it would work. Not even figure out. This guy is smarter than you and I combined, and he's been a libertarian for about 45 years. You know, he's done it all. He's fought it all through. He's written a bunch of books on it. And he can't figure out how this would work in the situation you're describing. Somebody does something horrible to you or your family and leaves and goes back to his wherever he's squatting. And so would you, how would you get him to get him to come to your private arbitration? How would you do that?
I mean, he came over to violate my consent and trespassed and committed a crime. He cannot use that as a defense saying that it's wrong when he himself did it as well, right? You can't even do that in a legal proceeding.
Right.
Forget the name of the term that is used for that. But, you know, it's like Kantian ethics as well, right? You did this, therefore you're saying it's okay for other people to do this to you. You know, you can't use that as a defense. So he's saying it's okay to initiate force. So when I come over there to grab him, to make my, since I'm the victim, to be whole again, he can't use that as defense saying, oh, he's trespassing. He's like, dude, you trespassed against my property and violated my rights, right? So, you know, you're the victim here. And, you know, libertarian principles apply to libertarians, right? You know,
he's not a libertarian. What if he is like a Mad Max type? You know?
That's what I said, libertarian principles only apply to libertarians. They don't apply to, you know, murderers, rapists, you know, these sort of things, you know, and defending their rights and saying that they have and advocating for them, right? And so much in the same manner that if someone else and robs him and he's looking for justice, you know, they'll say, well, you know, first of all, you need to resolve that first conflict you have with neighbor A before anyone's going to care about your grievances, accusations that have been put forth against you. All right. So, you know, if that person has incurs people that raise his home and he's looking for arbitration, the companies are going to say, yeah, we'll love to help you, but you have this dispute first that's on your record that you need to solve first. Right? It's kind of like credit cards. You know, we'll love to give you credit, but you need to pay back, you know, the people that you owe before we can loan you some more money.
Okay, so what if this guy?
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. So what if this guy has nearly unlimited resources compared to most people? Let's say he got into Bitcoin in 2012, or let's say he's Satoshi and he cashes in all that Bitcoin slowly over time, so it doesn't dump the price. So this guy, let's say he's on private property. He has forget you money to where he doesn't really have to be a part of society. Let's say he's bought enough food and water and all the toys he needs in his compound to last the rest of his life. He doesn't have to trade with anybody. And he has a private army. How do you go get him to bring him to justice?
So what's he doing sneaking over my my wallet to steal my car if he has
Oh, he gets kicks out of it. He gets kicks out of it.
Yeah. All right, cool. You know, that's good. You know, it means that he'll do it again, right? It's not just the first time. And so when he does it again, we'll just shoot him. And then it solves that problem.
Yeah, obviously.
Why risk going through all that mess and trying to grab him, you know? Yeah. And what else is he going to do next? You know, rape my sister? You know,
probably.
He gets off on B&B, man. He gets off on being mean, right? Yeah. There's a some town up in New England, I believe, and there was this jerk in New England. There's a lot of jerks in New England. It was the biggest town bully. Everybody hated him.
Is this the guy that got murdered?
Yes.
So I like this story.
Right. So the thing is, he was such a bully to everyone. He even shot people. And so eventually it came to be that he was confronted by the townspeople. And one of them shot him, killed him. And so they had the body, so many witnesses. Cops just couldn't get a statement. No one wanted to say anything. No one said they witnessed anything. They were thinking that, you know, good heavens, good riddance to this guy, that the government justice couldn't put him away. So vigilante justice did. And they didn't talk about it ever since again.
Nick Elroy is his name. It was not in New England. It was in Skidmore County, Missouri. And there's a movie about him. Do you know there's a movie about him?
No way.
Yeah. It's called, okay. Well, let's see. 60 Minutes ran a segment on him in 1982. There's a book from 1988 called Broad Daylight, which was turned into a made-for-TV movie in 91 called In Broad Daylight, starring Brian Dennehy as him, as the bully. Let's see. Connecticut filmmaker Without Mercy is a documentary about him. Pollyanna's Revenge, How Memory and Emotion Foster Happiness, had a chapter on him. Let's see, on and on. Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories, actually. they couldn't get anyone to say who did it, even though 35 people witnessed his killing. Yeah, it was probably a kid. It was probably like a six-year-old girl. Just grabbed daddy's gun and killed him.
Yep. So there you go, vigilante justice, you know, and that's pretty much the way how the West settled their dispute. There wasn't a lot of crime, but when you have one person who was acting in such a manner in your scenario, you know, they outnumbered him and take him down.
Probably from a distance. A lot of people in Free State Wyoming spend a lot of time practicing riflemanship. Not saying they're bad people, I'm just saying... I've been to the rifle ranges and they're 1500 yards, you know, so
right.
So I still don't understand, or he doesn't understand, and I'm still kind of baffled by this one thing. Everything you said makes sense and it's great. But the basic question is what happens if there's zero government? Like Boston's basically saying, in his lip hair, there would be courts and police, basically more like marshals than police. You know, people that would go get the guy to bring him to justice. And, you know, the libertarian 101 theory, the people, the newly minted libertarians, generally say things like, oh, well, obviously, we'd go to him and give him a list of five arbiters that we... that I agree would work, and he could pick one, and then we'd pay and go there. And what if he just says no and says, get off my property, and points guns at the bounty hunters coming to get him? That's the stalemate that Boston thinks requires a sliver of government.
Well, I mean, all right, so there's your first problem was the community business setting up right next to like a known murderer or a rapist, you know.
They can travel.
All right, so they travel and set up. Well, you know, it's in the best interest of the community business to make sure that there's no would-be aggressor setting up camp nearby.
It's like Mad Max with Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, everyone bleeds, right? You know, there's no one's invincible. So, you know, the security company would also have means to dispose such people. If they can, you know, that's why you do agreements with other security companies,
drones,
you know, to take out your lone wanderer.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't have to be that costly. You know, just put a drone with a shotgun and just, you know, fly it into his house.
Have you seen that video of the drone with the Glock?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an old video. It's like 8 years old or 10 years old or something. It's like somebody got a hobbyist drone, put a Glock on it, mounted a radio control trigger pull on it, and yeah, it just shows it like, I don't know, shooting a target or a piece of wood or something at like 5 feet. The guy just flies it up to the thing, like man height, you know, like heart height, and just blows it away.
I've seen drones with flamethrowers.
Where? At Porkfest?
No. Michigan Peace. Some farm country. There's some kind of... tarp that got stuck in wires, and so the only way to take it down was to send a drone with a flamethrower to burn it down.
Didn't burn the wires?
No, not at all. They're very careful. Precise.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, I like all your answers. I don't know if it's going to satisfy him. It sort of satisfies me. You know, this is the kind of thing, too, that is, I don't know if dangerous, but squicky to even ask in Liberty, especially on a radio show, because... The show I did for Saturday is called A Voluntarist Critique of the One Problem of Voluntarism. And people that don't know, voluntarists are people like us who believe that things should only be done voluntarily. You know, there shouldn't be any coercion like government. Hey, I made up a rhyme. Roses are red, violets are blue. No, wait, roses are red, violets are violet, sugar is sweet, and taxation is violence.
Yeah. Nice.
Yep.
You know, this also forgets that, you know, there's mercenary groups out there, too. You know, the ones that will be happy to do, you know, the kind of work that, you know, regular businesses can't.
They like it. Yeah.
Yeah. People love it. You know, Dog the Bounty Hunter. You know, there's people out there that enjoy this sort of stuff.
Although, in Lip Hair, he'd have guns. He only has bear spray right now because he's a convicted felon.
Yeah. So you have a lot of different approaches to do this.
All right.
You know,
I'm sold.
Whereas here, you're just limited onto waiting for the cops to show up, you know, minutes later, and then they shoot your dog. Right.
Or if you're in Detroit, you can hire that loon. Do you see that thing on the internet where that guy just went potato on everybody?
No.
The guy that runs the private threat management. Dale.
Which he'll probably send mercenaries after me for saying this, but it's public record.
The guy runs a private police organization in Detroit that provides reasonably priced police-like protection services that are affordable to people that usually can't afford police protection. And I'd like to say, before I get into him, if you want police-type protection and you can't afford it, bodyguards, check out Cell 411, which is an app that's free for iPhone and Android that you could set up people, first responders that are your neighbors and friends and family, and with a push of a button, send them an alert, send them live streaming video, and send them your turn-by-turn directions to your location. It's great for kids that are bullied, too. And, you know, for anything. So you don't have to call the police, who may show up and shoot your dog, or may not show up. They're not required to show up. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Supreme Court's case from 30 years ago, something. Yeah, like police were, you know, woman was being beaten by her husband or ex in D.C., called the police. They knew it was that was the situation. They literally stopped for donuts and coffee on the way. And by the time they got there, she was dead. And the family sued, and the Supreme Court said that while the police do have a directive to protect the community, they don't have a directive to protect any individual member of the community. So there you go. Police don't have to protect you.
And that's where this minarchism stuff fails.
Right.
So
why?
They also forget that you know, there's an obligation to protect life, liberty, and property.
Right. Right.
Under government. Right.
Right. Right.
And so at the same time, they also have to collect taxes. So you can't make the claim that they're there to protect your property when they first have to violate that and rob you of your property.
Yeah.
That is that's where the inconsistency lies with minarchism.
Although there's so many people that like killing and are so good at it. You know, like people in the military. What are those private army called? Blackwater. People like that. That, in lip hair, everyone would be eight times as rich. You know about that, right? That's the calculation on it. So everyone would have eight times the buying power they have now. So, you know, those Blackwater guys get paid pretty well. There's probably guys who've been doing it a long time, has some money saved up that would do it free. You know, because they like doing it, and they don't have to work anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe you need a government to provide that.
Yeah, the whole Bundy Ranch situation. All this volunteer militia groups came out there, right?
Yep.
First time they putting down rifles at government agents, and they didn't fire back.
Yep. That is a first. I don't know if that's ever happened, or at least not in the last 100 years, probably.
Right.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. There were a bunch of unique situations there that led to them not shooting back, whereas they usually do.
The argument was stronger for property rights, and the government couldn't trump that argument.
Yeah.
That's why they had to back down.
They're also concerned with the optics, you know. I think that their overseers called them on the radio and said, hey, let's not look bad and shoot women and children here again, like the government often does. Let's wait and just destroy these people in the courts. And actually, I think they won in the courts, didn't they, the ranchers?
They won in the courts. Yeah.
I don't think they got to keep their land, did they? But they didn't go to jail for whatever they did or were accused of.
Right.
They were accused of a controlled burn on their land that got out of control and went onto some government land and scorched, an acre or two of it. Yeah.
I think that was government land that they confiscated from other farmers, and this guy was last guy holding out. Yeah.
Yep.
So they're meddling in his affairs from the beginning and trying to get him to surrender, pretty much.
Weird thing about Wyoming is it's got more anti-government sentiment than anywhere I've ever been. I mean, it's even a joke in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Like, they want to clear out this county in Wyoming because that's where the aliens are going to land, and the government wants them all to themselves. And they tell everyone to leave. They tell them there's a nerve gas leak from an army depot, and there's some line in it, like, some of those farmers up there in that rural county in Wyoming don't like the government too much. They're not going to believe us. So the government goes out and shoots a bunch of sheep and says the nerve gas killed them, and then everyone evacuates. But Wyoming also has the highest per capita of government employees if you factor in federal, state, county, and local.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wyoming. Isn't that where you said Free State Wyoming was taking place?
Yeah.
How did that turn out?
It still exists. I'm theoretically a member. I signed up years ago and never. It's got a lot less people than Free State, New Hampshire, but yeah. it's also a bigger force than people think it is from Free State, New Hampshire. Because people in, like, I've heard Ian Freeman on Free Talk Live, great guy, great show, but I've heard him many times say, like, yeah, and Free State, Wyoming failed and, you know, it didn't take off. And it didn't take off in that it doesn't have, you know, 5,000 young people pointing cameras at them all the time. But it's got probably, you know, Free State, Wyoming, several hundred, you know, people probably 45 and older who keep to themselves, practice riflemanship, and don't like to be, you know, idiots on the internet like me. I'm on the internet more than anybody in Free State, Wyoming. I don't know if I'm a member. I'm not a member of anything, but... Yeah.
I don't think I pledged. I just moved here.
I was just very active on their forum and then moved here. And then there's a lot of people that, you know, with both Free State projects that pledge and never move. I just became friends with them all and then we moved here. My wife and I moved here. Yeah.
And I believe the Free State project, I remember hearing the president saying that has nothing to do with liberty or freedom. It just has to do with moving people to New Hampshire.
Well, it has, okay. Who's the president?
Claire? Carla? It was a female.
Carla.
Yeah.
The attorney from South America. Yeah. She's no longer the president because she wanted $100,000 a year from the Port Fish.
Which is kind of weird.
And that's the thing that happens a lot. Like, basically, Free State Project was supposed to be an ad hoc group. And the stated goal was to get 20,000 people to pledge, and they were supposed to dissolve when that happened. And they passed that a couple years ago, and they've just gotten, you know, bigger and bigger and more corporate and more ensconced with more rules and things like, you know, not letting people show up to... They banned Cantwell. I don't like Cantwell, but I don't like what they did to him. Remember what they did to him?
They banned him from Porkfest.
They banned him from even going. You know, he'd spoken there before. But then he said some things on the internet, and people got upset and said he's a racist and he's calling for violence. Well, actually, he was just calling for violence then. I think he became more racist later. But
did Dale Brown become racist?
Well, Dale, this is interesting though because I do want to mention this because it is Liberty 101, is it not, that to deal with bad actors without government, you shame them in public, right? Yeah, ostracize, let people know. Basically, I'm giving my Etsy review on Dale Brown, and it's horrible. He's failing. So, He's this guy, African American persuasion, who's racist against white people, it turns out, who runs this thing called Threat Management in Detroit. And he's like a libertarian superstar. Like, he spoke at the Michigan Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. He spoke at Porkfest. Everyone points to him. A lot of people point to him when they say, how would police work without the government? They say, Dale Brown and Threat Management. And that guy was like on an internet thread the other day, just screeching at people, threatening to kill them, and being really, really racist. Like saying things like everything was racist with him. Like I posted the statement, Detroit has the same population as the state of Wyoming, which is true. Not Detroit Metro, but the city of Detroit has 700,000 people. And that's about what Wyoming has. And I posted that. And my point was simply, I live somewhere that's not very populated. And he just, I'd never talked to him before. And he came on there and started screeching about how great Detroit was. which it's not. It's the North Korea of America. It used to be the most... Well, North Korea was never wealthy, but South Korea is now. North Korea is the maximum state of government in a place, basically. And Detroit is kind of the maximum state of government in America. The socialist politics and the Democrats and the unions for 50 years there have taken Detroit from the richest city per capita in America to one of the poorest, and everything's falling apart there, and crime's really high.
Yeah, it's a poo hole.
What do a lot of these poor, rundown cities have in common? The common
Democrats.
That they're run by Democrats.
Yep.
How's Richmond doing? And talk about the politicians that destroyed a city. You know,
Richmond run by Democrats?
Virginia? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Richmond was a poo hole in when I was hanging out there in early 80s. I think it's gotten better, maybe. I don't know.
It's gotten so much better.
Yeah. Because your work.
I live here.
Yeah.
I love it here.
When did you become a libertarian? It's a weird question, but.
I called myself a libertarian anarchist in 2006.
Yeah. It's about when I got into it. What were you before that? Unaffiliated?
Yeah, unaffiliated. Yeah.
Did you vote? Democrat?
Yeah, I voted. Yeah.
You voted Democrat?
I voted independent. I voted for both parties.
Yeah.
When I was able to vote.
Yeah.
Pretty much just like what their platform is. So I wasn't really either or. But my father was a Republican, so there was, I guess, conservative leanings.
My parents were Republicans, and my sisters were hippies. So I kind of got a lot from both of them, I think.
There we go.
You know. I've heard people say people who aren't as woke as us, I've heard say things like, libertarianism is the best of both worlds of Democrats and Republicans. And that's a terrible simplification of it. But you know, libertarians believe that you shouldn't need a permit to carry a gun, which is actually beyond what a lot of right-wingers think. And we also think that anybody should be able to marry anybody, and you know things that liberals believe, that drugs should be legal, et cetera. So I could see that.
My grandfather escaped from Cuba, so I had a lot of anti-communist education.
Oh, man.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he escaped in a dust cropper.
Wow.
So all the time was right. Many of his friends were disappearing. Things were not that great.
What year?
And so, I don't know. I have to look that up. 60s, I think.
That's interesting.
And they escaped, landed in the Florida Keys. He had a knife to fight off sharks in case his plane sunk.
Wow.
And, made it here.
Wow.
So I grew up with a lot of anti-authoritative upbringings, you can say.
Yeah. That's great. I want to hear more about that, but I want to tell you first that may be a theme in the Freedom Fiends, because Nima Vidadi, who I started this show with, his dad fled Iran right before the revolution when things were getting bad in the 70s.
Good for him.
Yep. Tell me more about your grandpa. That's interesting.
So he met Castro once, and Castro, he said, what good is, and he believed the promises. Like, yeah, this sounds interesting, but what good is lowering rent from $80 to $40 when you can't even make $40 anymore?
Yeah.
Right. So, he had a farm that was confiscated. Just everything just got destroyed. And so he fixed up a plane, dust cropper, and to make sure they could try to at least make it to the Florida Keys, he had a toy compass. At least head north, right? Yeah.
Man.
And he had a mirror to signal in case he did fall in those shark-infested waters. Tens of thousands of people die from that escape. From that journey in between those waters.
Wow.
So it's funny how a lot of the people who are open borders, a lot of liberals, lambast Trump. But, I never hear them lambast Obama when he ended the wet foot, dry foot policy, which means Cubans who touch soil can have asylum here. But he ended that.
Yeah.
And
he also detained children and separated families.
Yeah.
He just didn't tweet about it and yell about it. Obama did a lot of things quietly that Trump is doing openly. So we're segueing. Let's pivot.
I heard he might privatize the post office.
Who, Trump? We're recording. Trump? I mean, we're live. Yeah, this is being recorded on the 1st of July, Sunday, live. We're going out live. Yeah, that's it.
So something happened here. Borders, Trump, happened recently here in Lexington, Virginia.
Ah,
At a restaurant.
The red hen.
The red hen with the dirty, filthy front and awning.
Yeah, what a name. The owner, Stephanie Wickinson, retired. Packed up.
What?
Yes, he packed up. So, yeah, she left. She's no longer the owner of the restaurant.
What? I know that she left the local business persons association. She was the president.
Maybe that's what it is. She left.
I'll look it up.
But the funny thing is, you know, she asked Sanders, Buckaby, to leave. And she says she cited it when she told the Washington Post.
And that's for anyone that's living in a cave. What do they call that person, the mouthpiece for the president?
Yeah, the mouthpiece.
Yeah. Not the lawyer, but the person that speaks and answers questions for the president because he's too busy watching Fox News and rubbing himself and tweeting about it.
You know, it's hard to get a 10. You know, you got to spend some time on that. But she said that Sanders works in an inhumane and unethical administration.
Yeah.
And she said that, you know, it feels right in a moment of democracy when people have to make uncomfortable actions and decisions to uphold their morals. So it's kind of funny. If that's the case, then why didn't, you know, she kick out, Democrats from a restaurant when Obama was in office? You know, this is the leftist reeks of tons of hypocrisy.
What I'd like to know is if she was screaming, Bake the cake a year ago.
I'll bet she was.
Exactly. I bet you.
I mean, I could almost guarantee she was. I mean, it's kind of typecasting people, but I saw a picture of her and her husband and her son wearing those pink kitty cat hats.
I don't think you can buy those without signing something that says bake the effing cake.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the bake the cake people, you know, they did not say they would not make them a cake. They just weren't going to make one depicting a...
Yeah, they offered to sell them an undecorated cake.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So it's not like they refused their service. There's just some things they just didn't want to do. So...
Yep.
So that happened. So that's interesting, locally, here. And but Trump's all upset about it. It's funny how he takes to Twitter to everything.
I like it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So we were talking about borders.
Hey, I'm sending you a picture. It's in the Fiend phone. You can copy and paste that. It's a picture of them in their kitty cat pink hats. Oh, it says they're remaining closed through July 4th.
Yeah.
It wasn't the greatest PR move for her. People have been downvoting them on review sites, calling up and making fake reservations, and people have been... I saw a picture of a crowd of people out there screaming with police presence yesterday.
Somebody threw a pile of chicken feces at their doorstep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a funny mess. Not as funny as Roseanne's thing, right?
Oh yeah, and her outburst.
But you know, I don't think what she said was racist.
What was her outburst? I can't even remember now. There's so many outbursts.
There's this liberal who she likened to being a byproduct of Planet of the Apes and some extreme ISIS group or something like that.
Yeah.
And so people are, oh, that's racist. You know, she's not even black.
Yeah.
So it's people who think that, they're the ones who have the problem, right? In that association.
Yeah.
So Roseanne doesn't have a pattern of history of saying things like that. So, or being racist.
She's one of my favorite liberals, actually.
No, she's great.
She's into guns and weed, and she likes Trump and hates a lot of Democrats. So she's cool.
Yeah. I always wondered if they'd ever make a crossover between Roseanne and Married with Children.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the show they need to bring back, Married with Children.
He had an anti-feminist club,
No Ma'am.
No Ma'am. Yeah, they used to show that in a bar I used to go to in San Francisco called the Chatterbox, which was like a rock and roll dive bar. You know, it's named after a song by the New York Dolls. It was not a pretty place.
place I played a lot. Holds about 60 people, and they have a TV there, and they used to have what they called the anti-family hour. But every when the Simpsons first started, it was back to back with Buried with Children, and they had like drink special during that hour every week, and it would just be packed with scummy bike messengers and rock and rollers, drinking beer, eating peanuts, and laughing about how bad family is or whatever by watching. I don't know. I don't think the Simpsons are anti-family. I think Married with Children is. Married with Children is directed by a woman. It is produced by a woman. Created.
That's a man who, took care of his responsibilities when he knocked up Peg.
Yeah, he did. Begrudgingly.
He got a job. He was supposed to be a football star, and he chose to take the responsible route and forgo that stuff, and to make sure his kids were provided for.
I just saw a picture, a meme of that kid that wanted to ban guns, the screechy one that claimed to be at that school shooting, but actually got his bike. Yeah. A picture of him, and it says, "And just like that, I was waiting tables at the Red Hen."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or that reporter, right? I was there.
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't there. He wasn't even a student there. He was like 19, and he graduated last year.
And no way.
You didn't know about this? Oh, yeah. So there's a CNN video online on the CNN YouTube page. I think they took it down. But it was the raw feed of an interview with him and the two other, poster children for gun grabbing. For the new kind of gun grabbing, where they don't say, I think we need sensible gun controls, where they just say, I want to repeal the Second Amendment and take your guns. The new kids on the block. So yeah, there's a video of the raw feed, before they edited it, just the three people sitting for interviews and one person leaving the chair, the next person getting in the chair, like the whole session for 2 hours of them being interviewed. For CNN, and they used, 5 minutes of it or whatever. And at one point, David Hogg says, yes, I mean, I'm committed to doing something about this. As soon as I heard about the shooting, I got on my bike and rode to the school, grabbed my camera and rode to the school. And the other two girls look at him like, that's not the story, man. And then he kind of backtracks, realizing, they can edit that out. But somebody wasn't thinking, some intern or whatever, some low-level person at CNN, just put the whole thing up on YouTube, and it was up for a while. I saw it.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was kind of weird. Yeah, it was definitely staged. Like, he's just reading lines and messing up and told to read up again. It wasn't authentic, that's for sure. I went to a national die-in protest in front of the Capitol in D.C. recently. And, I talked to the people that are there, and I happened to talk to the father of the organizer. This girl was putting it all together, and he did well, and the conversation was civil, right? For six, 7 minutes. He obviously didn't know what he was talking about, being the father of this girl and clueless about gun issues. A few days later, I got an email from the girl asking me to take down the video. It's like, how dare you talk to the father? When I was right there, it's like, well, you're talking, I can't walk up stage and interview you. And she sent YouTube a request to take down the video, and it was a mess.
She said
that she revokes permission for the interview to be up.
But it was someone else, right?
Yeah, it's somebody else. Yeah, it's her father. Yeah, I told her get her father to email me, and maybe I'll consider it. Her father's a man. He can ask himself, right?
Yeah, a man.
So he did. He emailed me. And then I said, how do I know this is the real you?
That's what I think.
Send me a picture with the current date and stamp with the sign that says, I love guns, to verify that it's you. And never responded.
So it was her? You think? She got on his computer?
No, I'm pretty sure it was the father. The way he wrote sounded like the way he talked. So,
So why do you think he didn't confirm it? Because he didn't?
Oh, because, because I'm trolling him. I'm asking him to send a picture of him with a sign saying, I love guns.
Did he love guns or hate guns?
No, he did love guns. Yeah, he was against guns.
Because there is a father of one of the kids that was killed that's still adamantly pro-gun. Do you know about that?
No, tell me.
Well, because they don't interview him. Yep, one of them.
That's really funny. Of course, YouTube never took it down, never took the complaint seriously. And, you know, people forget that, you know, when you're out there in the public, you know, your consent is not really required. You know, that's the problem with public property, right? If it's private property, yeah, you have rules with that. But public property, if the camera's visible, you know, I really don't need your consent to record, especially if you're in front of the camera and engaging in the interview, right? But that's a sign of your assumption of that you give consent to it, especially at the end of the conversation in front of the camera, you shake hands.
What's your YouTube channel for people who want to check it out? It's good.
You can find it under my name, Cal Molinet, K-A-L-M-O-L-I-N-E-T.
Is that a Cuban name?
Catalan last name.
Catalan? Like the French-Spanish anarchist?
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
So who's that in your family?
That's on my father's side of the family my Cuban grandfather that escaped, and they trace it back towards the Catalan region.
You got anarchy in your blood, man, and anti-communism.
Yeah.
All I've got is a great grandfather who was in the Revolutionary War on the non-British side. That's kind of cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Non-British side.
Yeah. Well, they were
colonizer.
British. Yeah. One of those colonizers. Yeah.
One of those white colonizers.
One of those white landowners.
He was a farmer, so he was a landowner.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I want to make it clear we're not Trump fans, but we're not anti-border.
Does it offend you when you see libertarians who are screeching against their interest and saying, all borders should be open?
No. I mean, I understand where they're coming from.
Saddens me.
I mean, libertarianism has borders, right? My house has borders.
Private property
has borders, right? I'm not against borders. Like, I want roads. Yeah. I'm not against roads. You know, I don't want the government to meddle in the business of providing them, of course, right? But I'm not going to go out of my way and destroy these roads and tear them up.
I have a theory that if the government ever collapses and people try to build, a stateless society, I think that the people who worked on the roads might go out and try to destroy the roads. They have access to dynamite, you know? I could see it.
I could also see
that in the process of it going to statelessism, if it didn't happen immediately, police getting really creepy, like when their paychecks stop coming, maybe continuing to be police for a while and stealing things.
Right.
I could see that.
Yeah. So I'm not against, we were discussing earlier, libertarian principles apply to libertarians. You know, I'm not going to advocate or defend, so much, you know, not libertarians, not so much that, you know, if they advocate for property rights, great. You know, if the people open borders, then for libertarians, open borders for people who respect property rights, for people that are not going to come here and advocate for more government and more tyranny. Right.
Yeah, that's why it's against your self-interest when libertarians are screeching.
All borders should be open.
I mean, it's kind of the point where, like, a lot of people have unfriended me because I won't throw open my legs and welcome the world. And I would have no problem with open borders if there was no welfare, if there was completely no welfare for anybody. And if you came here, you had to work, you know, or have money.
Yeah, I mean, you see what the open border policies in Europe are doing right now and ravaging those countries, right? You had even...
You're racist.
I'm kidding. Yeah, you had the Turkish prime minister. The Turkish prime minister stated, because he was... There are many people in Europe that have dual citizenship in Turkey, and his elections was coming up, and he was trying to go on a campaign in a couple of European states, but it was refused to enter. And so he threatened. He said, well, if you're going to act this way, then I'm just going to open up the floodgates of immigration, and let's see how Europe looks like in a couple of generations from now.
Is that Erdogan?
I believe so. Yeah. So he's telling that open borders is a method of invasion. And it's a weapon. You even had his...
It is, but that guy's a bad example to use as a good example, because that guy is kind of Hitler-like. He's very
But he's telling you that this is that's what it is.
Yeah,
right? He called it for what it is. He had his like ambassador or head of state or something talk about Soylus saying that he was telling Europe that if they have the courage, if they want, they'll send 15,000 refugees every month. And he says, we'll send them every month and it'll blow your mind.
Oh, I see. I thought he was saying he would open up his borders and let everyone in. He was going to send his, I don't want to say.
Well, this was a separate statement. That's what the president said. And this is what I think his ambassador said.
Right.
So people who are telling you what it is, right?
So for people that don't know the problems that are happening in Europe right now, basically by having a huge population of young men with no jobs and from Muslim backgrounds who basically think it's okay to grab women and assault them.
It's a culture clash. I mean, you're talking about opening your legs. You know, there's like over 1,000 women who were reported victims of sexual assaults by many of these, quote, asylum seekers. And because of these open border policies, it happened during New Year's in Berlin. Right. So, you know, it's.
So what happened New Year's in Berlin?
So you had over 1,000 reported sexual assaults by women there.
On a street party, right?
On New Year's Eve by asylum seekers. You know, a lot of the police reports won't even identify the ethnicity of where these people are from. Sometimes they'll just say Asians, just like the grooming gangs in England. They call them Asians. Right.
What are grooming gangs?
This is a culture clash.
I don't know what that is.
Grooming gangs. These are grooming rape gangs in England. This is what Tommy Robinson was trying to cover and went to jail for freedom of speech for talking about it.
What is grooming?
Grooming, I guess, means kind of kidnapping and raising them to be sex slaves.
Oh, okay. Because I've heard the term grooming talking about pedophiles, people who are friendly to kids and groom them over a period of time. You're talking about people who kidnap people and then groom them to look like they want or something?
Both.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's acceptable in that culture, so, you know, it's what they do.
Yeah, Paris is basically turning into a third world country, which is bizarre because it's like Paris, man. That's one of the pinnacles of Western civilization for hundreds of years now, you know, when people think of high art and high culture and A lot of it is just turning into a slum. And it's not anything in particular, like I'm not saying Muslims are all bad. I'm saying when you bring a bunch of people in with the don't have the same values and dump them somewhere, they don't have the same values, and it doesn't go well. And it's being hidden by the media too. You know about that, right? I mean, you mentioned the guy who's arrested for trying to talk about it.
I mean, I'm anti-Islam, pro-Muslim, right?
Yeah, me too. I like that.
Yeah.
The same way that I am, and I'm assuming you are, anti-war and pro-gun.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
That was the tagline of Freedom Fiends for a long time. It might be again. Yeah, I don't know. Let's check it out. So tell me more about borders. I think the problem with a lot of left libertarians is they believe the way that things should be in Libpair, which is no national government borders, should happen now while there is a government and there are incentives for people to come here and do horrible things.
Right. I mean, 50% of federal crimes, of all federal crimes, they're committed along the Mexican border. Right. That's a report from the Department of Justice.
By the federal government?
Yeah, 50% of federal crimes. Yeah, by the federal government.
The other half are committed by the federal government.
Yeah. So you find, 38.6% of all federal cases involved immigration, right? There is a lot of crime that comes with this. Not just drug related, which means gang related, which means violence. Most gun violence are gang related, which are drug related, right?
Because drugs are illegal.
Drugs are illegal, but doesn't it mean that, you know, they're going to stop doing other criminal things? It's because
if drugs were completely legalized, they would just do full-time kidnapping and human trafficking.
Yeah, MS-13 would just go into, you know, the lawn mowing business or something, right?
No.
Yeah.
That's racist. No, they wouldn't. They continue criminal activities.
Right, yeah. They'll find other ways to make money off of that stuff, right? So kidnappings, you know, whatever. And that does happen all the time in Mexico. Mexico is not a safe place. It's great that 100 politicians were murdered, right? I think this past year. But, you know, that just shows that.
Wow.
You know, the whole place there. Is. Yeah. The whole place is. It gives you a look, not just as politicians, but, you know, family safety and the kind of culture that's there.
Well, it's funny too, because there's a libertarian who I don't like very much. Who lives in Mexico, who constantly advocates for how safe Mexico is and how people should move there. That guy also, though, is a millionaire, which probably buys you a little more security than most of the people he's enticing to move there.
Right. Yeah. Acapulco?
Yeah.
I went to Acapulco, and there's like military. They say there's no police. Yeah, there's military with machine guns and rifles like every other block of the corner.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Go Mexico. But yeah, there's lots of crimes that are committed. I mean, recently there was that one case with Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, a 7-time convicted felon and 5-time deported immigrant. When he was not turned over to ICE, he killed someone. He went on a murder spree called Kate Stingley.
So yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of
and
that.
And there's a lot of cherry picking of stats. I'm just disgusted by how left libertarians are so screechy in favor of there should be no borders right now. It's constant. It's near constant. Like I saw some libertarian post something the other day that was this. It's kind of funny. It was a video that some guy made who, you know, I'm sure he would describe himself as redneck. He was a kind of rural, rustic-looking fellow. Looks like most people in Wyoming was basically talking into the camera sincerely and saying, you know, I've been reading a lot of your posts. I've been reading a lot of your posts. It was a pro-immigration, open immigration thing. And it was basically, you know, I read a lot of your posts. You people, I'm reading these comments. You're anti-immigration. A lot of you look like me. You're into the same things as me. But I wonder, you know, you say you only want to come here legally, but what's so legal? Is everything legal on your farm? You know, you don't have a sawed-off shotgun. You don't have some plant growing somewhere that isn't legal. You don't have registration for everything you should on your farm. You know, it sounded like a libertarian rant. I don't know if you guys are libertarian or not, but it sounded like the rants I hear nonstop of. It's like there's so much parroting. Most libertarians are parroting things that they've heard over and over and over. They're mostly true things, but they're parroting Murray Rothbard, quoted, you know, paraphrased by Boston Tea Party, paraphrased by who's the redheaded little guy that made Where's Mom Jeans? Larkin Rose.
Narky Rose.
Narky Rose. You know, paraphrased by people on Free Talk. I mean, Free Talk Live actually have been doing this a lot longer and probably have more of a. They're probably quoting or paraphrasing Harry Brown because Ian actually worked for him back 15-20 years ago. I'm not saying a lot of people do have original thoughts. Ian Freeman does. He's a great guy. I like Free Talk Live. It's a good show. But a lot of libertarians I hear are paraphrasing things that other libertarians have said, and they don't really think about them. They think of them as canon. They think of them as religion. You know, it's their religion. And they have screechy answers to everything. And a lot of times it's making fun of people who aren't all the way purely pure anarchists. Like Lou Fien does this. You know, like if he was on this show right now, and I love the guy, and he's a good friend, but he would be making fun of us, like, oh, my borders, they're going to take my jobs. You know, just repeating these. And actually, he kind of made up a lot of the things that have become cliches with a lot of other people. But people just kind of parrot these things and don't really think about them. And when pressed, they don't really have anything to say other than, you know, they throw the non-aggression principle in the air as canon, as the only rule for everything. And not taking into account that there's a government still.
Right. I mean, create the libertarian society, then open the borders, right?
Yeah.
And see how that works out. But at the same time,
how would that work
pattern
out?
Of history.
Would that work out better? You
think? That work out so much better. Yeah, that's because it's all privatized. Yeah. Good luck, you know, with the invasion tactic that the Russia, USSR did to the Ukrainians. And their tactic was the Ukrainians were very anti-authoritative and they wanted to displace those people with more pro-loving communists. And so they sent in massive swarms of immigrants, you know, opening their borders and pouring them into Ukraine to make Ukraine Russia. You know, so you have examples of history of open borders and the effects, and not just in Europe, but in other places around the world. And, you know, Turkey did that to Cyprus. Cyprus wanted to be closer to Greece. Turkey started sending in, opening their borders for, forcing them to open the borders for immigrants, Turkish immigrants to come in. So when the time happened, they could declare war on them. And the civil war and the war happened. And today the island split in half, half Turkey, half Cyprus, and the UN control are in the middle of all that. So it's a demographic war, and leftists love it because, you know, a majority of these people that do come crossing it, the borders, vote Democrat, vote for a bigger government.
Yeah.
Right. So.
So I think, yeah, so follow the money there, and it's the elites trying to remain elite. And people who are fabulously wealthy or even just kind of wealthy and working in government are a lot more insulated from it. Like, you know, Donald Trump is never going to have people passed out on his lawn like I've had when I've lived in, you know, ghetto-ish areas of San Francisco and Los Angeles. He's never going to... Have someone run up to him and point a gun at him and take his wallet. You know,
neither will the Pope.
Yeah.
Pope has walls.
Yeah. And Pope has armed guards 24/7. You know, all these and Nancy Pelosi. But it's interesting that Trump is in favor of this, and some here's the thing, like I just want to get back to these darn left libertarians. Like I can't even really I can't say this kind of stuff on the internet because everyone screeches at me and then blocks me. So I can really basically only say it on radio where I speak in one direction and then they'll just quietly go block me. I mean, I can't even have a conversation on the internet about this stuff because most of my friends are left libertarians who will make fun of this and say, my borders and my jobs and they took my jobs and, you know, just throw out these one-liners without really having a debate. And it's kind of funny, too, because I think a lot of the problem is I think that a lot of people who've embraced libertarianism in the past 5 years, I mean, there's been this huge groundswell of it. When we started doing the show in 2011, there wasn't nearly as much of it. I actually think we had a lot to do with that. And I think what we really had a lot to do with was the spread of what I call macho libertarian flash, of just making fun abjectly without shame of minarchists or of statists. Just like, those people don't exist. We're the cool ones. You know, if you believe in any kind of government, I can't talk to you. That kind of like, I guess Stefan Molyneux believes that too, but he's a right winger now. But do you know that kind of people? Like, they can't even talk to you. If you don't agree with them 100% and just spout libertarianism 24/7 and just kind of speak in cliches. It kind of reminds me of AA meetings. I went to AA meetings for decades. And you ever been to one?
No.
Okay.
I love alcohol.
Yeah. But, you know, some people get sent to them by the courts or go with a friend or something. A lot of people have been to one who, you know, don't need them or want them. But, yeah, there's so many things that are parroted over and over and over. And in AA meetings, they actually sometimes do this thing where they'll chant the thing that they're parroting. Like when they're reading the opening statement at the beginning of each meeting, you know, there's this thing that says, like, in NA, it says, and alcohol is a drug. And the person is reading it out loud, and everybody chimes in and parrots, alcohol is a drug, period. You know, like it's culty, it's creepy. But I think that's how a lot of left libertarians are. And it's funny because I kind of helped, Nima Vedati and I helped create that in or spread that in Liberty. Like 7 years ago in 2011 when the show started, there were not a lot of people making fun of minarchists and making fun of status loudly. There was a lot more like kind of libertarian party type people, a lot more like, we wear ties and work within the system. Or even if they didn't work within the system, there was like a lot more politeness. And Nima Vedati and I prided ourselves on saying, like, you know, Tom Woods is like the college professor, and Nima and I are like Beavis and Butthead cutting up in the back of the classroom. I mean, we're proud of that. And we actually coined the term libertarian brutalism for that, which Cantwell picked up and then a bunch of other people ran with. But we were talking about brutalist architecture, which is that horrible fascist post-World War II style of architecture. Like most FBI buildings are brutalist architecture. It's like windowless, concrete, utilitarian, built to scare you kind of architecture.
It's called brutalism. So, and we applied that to our form of libertarianism. But it's kind of funny because I'm getting a lot of that back now when I kind of put that message in the bottle out there 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's very Aurelian, the way these buildings look. They kind of look like they're from that book in their description.
Yep. Did you know that term, brutalist architecture?
No.
Google that, people. Brutalist architecture. There's a Wikipedia page on it, and it's pretty hilarious. And it's just, you look at it, you're like, that's exactly what that kind of architecture should be called. A lot of police stations are brutalist architecture. You know, if they have windows at all, they're usually narrow. They don't have a lot of views. You know, they're basically made so you can't shoot into them, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fortresses.
Well, that was a good take on borders. I don't think we've talked about borders on the show.
I could do a whole show about how left libertarians are wrong sometimes if you want.
Yeah, let's do that next time.
Yeah.
It's just
we'll talk about C4SS.
They sound exactly. Was that students for no, what is it? C4SS. What's it stand for?
Center for a
Stateless Society, which are left libertarians and their most famous members are either child molesters or narcs. That's their claim to fame. You know about that?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Brad Spengler and what was her name? We should name check her.
Yeah, I forgot.
Let me just Google libertarian narc and see what comes up. Libertarian narc. Yep. So, any closing comments there?
Stay liberated. You may have some unpopular opinions, but I think discussion and debate is good for that, and not to get O'Reilly, as you're mentioning, people offended you and
not to get O'Reilly.
Riled up.
Oh,
O'Reilly. Yeah.
Don't get O'Reilly either.
Yeah. But yeah, it's good to be a fiend and I've always been a fiend. I think that's important to mention.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you for your service and meow and worms.
Worms.